Blog Talk Radio. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. I hope everyone's in a great mood tonight. We have a very special VIP guest. Her name is Gloria Allred, and I want you to know that it would take me 2 or 3 days to read her whole bio and all her accomplishments, but I'm going to do the best I can to surmise just a little bit about her before I bring her on board. I hope everyone out there is in a great mood, and we have a special co-host tonight. Her name is Christina Blodgett, and she is with Blog Talk Radio, who is actually, that's the person we're with, Blog Talk Radio. And Christina is the Director of Customer Relations, and she is going to help us out. So I'm going to bring her up as well. Gloria Allred was featured today. For all of you that went to the homepage of Blog Talk Radio, you saw her book scrolling back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And also she was featured in Blog Talk's own blog, which goes to every media outlet on the earth. So I'm really, really honored that she chose to share a little bit of her time, which is extremely valuable, with all of us, and let us be part of her amazing life. Her cases read like the who's who of everybody on earth, but I'm going to just kind of bring in a few names. O.J. Simpson, Michael Jackson, Heather Mills, divorced from Paul McCartney, the Beatle, Robert Blake, the actor, Hunter Tylo, the actress, who was actually fired by Aaron Spelling for becoming pregnant. And, of course, I've written this all from different parts that I found it. So if it's not totally accurate, Gloria can let me know. Rocker Tommy Lee's battery charges. Model Kelly Fisher's lawsuit against Dodi Fayed before he died with Princess Diana. Also, the sexual abuse case against the Catholic Church. And then there was a murderer, convicted murderer, Scott Peterson. His mistress, Amber Fry, she was her attorney. And those are just a few. I mean, we could go on and on with her list of people, and it's just incredible. What I felt was, what I read through so many things about Gloria that just really stayed with me, and I actually put it up on our description of tonight's show. In her own words, the Holocaust began when Jews were deprived of their civil liberties and escalated into them being deprived of their lives. We must take a stand whenever someone is denied basic civil rights. Don't tolerate discrimination for a single minute. And then I also added some personal things about Gloria that are up there, and I'm going to let her tell us about them instead of me kind of spouting them off, because they are very personal things that she's gone through. She is also a member of MNSA, and in order to be a member of MNSA, by the way, you have to have an IQ that is considered an IQ of a genius, which obviously she would have to do all she's done. So with that, I am going to say right away that there is so much more that you can find out about Gloria by just, you know, writing her name in Google. And let me bring up our co-host, Christina. Hello? Are you there, Christina? Hello, Christina.
I am here, Joy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for asking me to co-host with you tonight. I'm so excited. I've followed Gloria for a long time. She's been an inspiration to me and to many I know, and I've been reading her book, and it's such a good read. Can't put it down. So I'm really excited for this evening.
Great. I'm so glad. And the name of her book is?
Fight Back and Win.
Fight Back and Win. That's what we all want to do. And it's my 30-year fight against injustice and how you can win your own battles. And that book is actually for sale. You can see it on the description page, and it's for sale on Amazon and I'm sure many other places. But let me go ahead and see if Miss Allred is with us. Hello.
I am. Hello.
Hello, and how are you tonight?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, and be absolutely feel free to correct me for all of the things.
Well, everything sounded fine, I think, from what I heard, except for the MNSA. I don't know where that came from.
Uh-oh. But, you know that. Okay, well, that's fine.
All right, but other than that, you know, I don't know if I'm smart enough for MNSA or not, but I'm not a member, so.
You're not a member. Well, okay. Somebody wanted you to be or whatever. So.
You know, I don't know. Do I want to be a member of any club that would have me? I'm not sure. I don't think so. But. to paraphrase W.C. Fields. But MNSA is truly a great organization, though.
Yeah,
I just,
yeah.
I'm not really, you know, I'm just so busy with lawsuits and my clients that, frankly, wouldn't have time to even apply or join.
To really go into MNSA. Well, you know, I had heard you on KABC, is that right, out of L.A.?
Yes.
And I had no idea it was also TV, because I read that you had gotten 3 Emmys.
Yeah, well, I used to do commentaries on KABC Eyewitness News and television in Los Angeles. I haven't done it for a number of years, but I was nominated for 3 Emmys, so I appreciated that when I did them. And then I was a radio talk show host for 14 years on KABC Radio.
14 years. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Because I heard you for probably a year, and then I moved out of that area, couldn't get you anymore. But I know that one of the things that I actually printed out is that right now you're very involved. Was it November 5th? Your law firm filed a writ with the California Supreme Court?
Yeah, actually, I'm so glad that you're asking me about that, because just yesterday, there was a big, you know, news event, which is that the California Supreme Court has decided to accept our case challenging Proposition 8, and I'd be happy to go into that a little bit if you would like.
I'd love for you to.
Okay, well, what happened was we represent 2 same-gender couples, and they were denied a marriage license 4 years ago in Beverly Hills, and therefore, we were the first, actually, I think, to announce that we would be filing a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the Family Code section, which limited marriage to the union of a man and a woman. And, in fact, we did file that lawsuit. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And in May, we won that lawsuit and the right for not only our couples, you know, our couple to marry, but in addition, others to marry. And then our clients did get married, Robin Tyler and her life partner, Diane Olson. Then on November 4th, the voters in California, the majority, passed Proposition 8, which was the same language they purported to limit marriage to a union of a man and woman in California, but said it was a constitutional amendment, since the court had previously said that it would be unconstitutional under our California Constitution, a violation of the equal protection of the law, to deny same-gender couples the right to marry. And so we immediately, the day after the election, November 5th, mm-hmm. filed a petition with the California Supreme Court challenging the constitutionality of this new proposition, Proposition 8. And yesterday, the court accepted our case. So we're very, very excited.
Oh, wonderful.
And even though they didn't grant a stay, which we requested to stop Proposition 8 from going into effect until the
mm-hmm.
court reaches a final decision,
mm-hmm.
they did set a short time frame, much shorter than usual, for the attorneys to file briefs, and I think they're going to hear this case very early next year, and so after they receive all the briefs and the arguments. And they've asked us essentially to answer three questions for them, which we're really happy about, and we're looking forward to answering them for the court. The first question is Prop 8 invalid because it constitutes a revision or rather than an amendment to the California Constitution? And that is one of our arguments, that it is invalid for that reason, that it really is a disguised constitutional revision. What they should have done was to do it a revision. The Constitution sets forth how you're supposed to do it, and they didn't. What you have to do for that is they have to go to the legislature and get a two-thirds vote of the legislature and then have it ratified by the electorate, or have an authorized state constitutional convention and then have it authorized by the electorate. They didn't either. Why? Probably because they wouldn't be successful in getting such a vote from the legislature, since our legislature has already passed a bill saying they would be in support of same-gender marriage. Unfortunately, it was vetoed by Governor Schwarzenegger. In any event, so they called it an amendment, but again, if it's a revision, they didn't go about it the right way, and that's what we're arguing. It's a revision in the sense that they're trying to undermine the Equal Protection Clause to revise it. The second question the court asked is does Prop 8 violate the separation of powers doctrine under the California Constitution? And that is a question we raised in our petition to the court. Essentially, that argument is there are three branches of government, as I'm sure you know,
mm-hmm.
the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the judicial branch. And
mm-hmm.
and each is separate from the other and has its own independent function. What we're saying is that once there's a final judgment of the judicial branch, that is, once the California Supreme Court has spoken and issued a final judgment, that judgment cannot be eliminated, eroded, undercut in any way by either the legislature or by the people through a proposition. Because the people through a proposition, that's coextensive with what the legislature can do. And so we say it violated the separation of powers in a sense for the proposition, the majority in the proposition process to try to eliminate the Supreme Court decision involving same-gender marriage. The last question they asked is,
mm-hmm.
if Prop 8 is not unconstitutional, in other words, if it is valid, what is its effect, if any, on the marriages of same-gender couples performed before the adoption of Prop 8? Now, that's a big question because there's thousands of couples, like my couple, my clients,
right.
who married when the court said it was constitutional for same-gender couples to marry and it was unconstitutional to deny them a marriage license.
Right.
By the way, I'll be on Dr. Phil tomorrow.
Oh, okay. What time?
Well, whatever time Dr. Phil comes on in whichever city your listeners are listening to.
Sure.
And
right.
he actually taped two shows on Prop 8, and I'm on both of them.
Right.
So we'll be discussing some of this tomorrow, though not in as much detail as your listeners are hearing right now.
Right.
Because there are other people on the show with me, but I thought Dr. Phil did a great job on both shows. I was on with Mayor Newsom and someone from the Human Rights Campaign Fund, and we debated three people who were in support of Prop 8, and we were, of course, opposed to it. So in any event, we're concerned what would happen to all those people who already got married.
Absolutely.
The answer is we think that those marriages, no matter what happens, are still valid because they took place, A, at a time when the court said they could be married,
yeah,
and that it was constitutional to marry them, and B, in order to, you can't retroactively nullify a fundamental right like the right to marry. The only way that can be done in a proposition, if it can be done, and I'm not even sure that it can, would be to specifically state in the proposition that this is going to be retroactive. And they never stated that. So the Attorney General, Jerry Brown,
mm-hmm.
for that reason, doesn't think it would be retroactive, even if Prop 8 is upheld. And I don't think it would be retroactive. So those are these are some of the issues involved. And, you know, domestic partnership is just not the same as marriage. We know that. And
right.
because it just, you know, the marriage has a special significance to it, a special legal, social, in fact, the financial significance, but mostly legal and social. It's acknowledging people's families, family relationships. It's giving respect to them. Domestic partnership is really a second-class status, and I think it's important that they have the right to marry.
Absolutely, and, you know, I live in San Francisco, and we were, you know, everyone was so excited getting married, and it was just a wonderful occasion, and then all of a sudden, you know, everyone here is flabbergasted, and I'm so glad that you're on our show tonight, knowing that you are doing something, you know, to help these people that are married.
Well, important something, a very important something. I might add that I'll be speaking at a rally in Sacramento this Saturday. There's going to be a big rally on the march at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Everyone's invited, a big protest on the Capitol steps in Sacramento.
Oh, that sounds great. We all need to get out and be part
right.
of that.
Right, show our support. Supposedly it's going
show
to be a very
support.
Big rally.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I would like to know, you know, what brought you up to this point where you're very, very involved in the most important issues of the day, actually, for people that are not in the mainstream, although in San Francisco, where I live, they are, you know, so for me it's a little different here. But, Gloria, you know, I was going to read more about your past or your upbringing and
that's
all
okay.
of this.
I think the issues are more important, frankly.
Yeah, you know, they're right now, and I have friends that just are, you know, they wrote me and they call me. They said, oh, I've just got to tell her how much I appreciate she's working for us because, you know, they think they're married. And, you know, so this is the most important thing right now.
It is very, you know, it is, I'd say, the biggest civil rights issue of our time right now.
Of our time.
It is. It's a huge issue. Whether persons who are gay and lesbian are going to be denied their right, the fundamental right to marry. And the Supreme Court in the May case said no, that everybody is entitled to the equal protection of the law under the California Constitution. The only way, and that marriage is a fundamental right, the only way the state can impinge upon that
mm-hmm.
is if they show a compelling state interest. Because the court has found that gays and lesbians are a suspect classification. Now, what that means is, it means that the court has found that they are a minority who has a history of discrimination against them. In a sense, they are politically powerless to change anything because they are a minority. And they are in need of protection from the court. So, now, can the government show a compelling state interest as to why they need to discriminate against gays and lesbians? And the answer is no. The court said there is no compelling state interest because, you know, the right to marry for heterosexuals is not at all affected if, in fact, gays and lesbians can marry. Their rights, their privileges, their benefits of marriage, they all stay the same. There's nothing, no change in that. And also, there is a harm to the children of same-gender couples if their parents are not permitted to marry, because then their parents are, you know, that's like a second-class position. Well, why aren't your parents married, Johnny and Janie?
Right.
Well, they're domestic partners. Well, right away that means they're marked as being gay or lesbian, as though that's as though there's something wrong with it. Of course, there isn't. Otherwise, why wouldn't they be able to be married? It's like, okay, well then maybe the state doesn't think you're good enough to enjoy that fundamental right. So that's wrong, and it's not going to be, you know, that the court struck that down. I'm so proud of them that they did.
Absolutely. And, of course, where I am, which I live right, actually I do my shopping in the Castro, and, you know, I see all the little babies that the couples, you know, have adopted, and you know, it's to me it's like, absolutely, why wouldn't they be married? Why shouldn't that child have all the protection and all the rights of any child?
Well, exactly.
You know, it's easy for me, though, and I understand in other parts of the country and the world that it's not quite so cut and dried, but for me, it's a given. That's why I was really shocked that California, I'm not quite sure I understand what happened here, but you probably could fill us in on what happened. Well,
the bad news is that Prop 8 passed. The good news is that it passed by a much smaller number, a smaller percent, than Prop 22 did some years ago. So I think the trend is that more and more people are supportive of marriage equality and against discrimination in marriage. That's the trend. We aren't quite there yet.
No.
But that is the trend, and I'm very proud of everyone as a result of that. So now we have to hope that the Supreme Court of California will have show the same wisdom and courage in deciding this case that they did as they decided the case in May.
Well, I'm sure that hopefully they will. I know that I have a close friend, Kevin, who has a blog talk radio show called Gay Life. Coach, and that's what he's all about, is trying to help people come out of the closet, be free, and let go, and don't worry about, and, you know, and so I'm sure for people like Kevin, this kind of set him back, but it's just going to take a little time. It'll get there.
Well,
everything does take time.
Well, there will be a decision by the California Supreme Court, so we'll see, and for people who say, as they often do,
mm-hmm.
Well, but the people have spoken through the proposition. My response is that the Constitution is the ultimate expression of the will of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And everything has to be measured against that. So it's for the court to protect the minority against the tyranny of the majority,
mm-hmm.
and not to just go with any whim of the majority at any particular point in time. 60 years ago,
mm-hmm.
the court had before it a ban on interracial marriage in California. And they struck down that ban, even though the ban was very popular at the time. The majority thought that that interracial marriage should be banned. But the court struck it down in a case called Perez versus Sharp, finding that there is a fundamental right to marry the person of one's choice, otherwise qualified person of one's choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that right cannot be interfered with by the state. So I'm so happy they found it again under the Equal Protection Clause. That's the precedent we cited, and that's the precedent that they cited and provided this protection. And you know, joy broke out all over California because of this marriage case in May.
In May. You know, I remember moving out here actually about 30 years ago from Texas, and I was warned that blacks and whites were dating and marrying. I was warned, Gloria. And it's like now, you know, I wonder, oh, my gosh, how did I grow up there? I don't know if I had bad karma or what.
And now we have a president who's going to be in the White House
who
is the product of an interracial marriage.
That's right.
Barack Obama, and what a popular person he is.
He is. Now,
so we are changing. You know, the whole marriage definition is changing, too.
Well, he wasn't your choice, was he? Weren't you for Hillary? Or was that
I was an elected. I was an elected Hillary delegate from the 30th Congressional District.
Okay.
But, and I still love Hillary. But, of course, after she was not successful in the primary, even though she came very close.
Very close.
In fact, I think she won more popular votes than he did. But she didn't win the primary.
Nope.
And I became a supporter of Barack Obama after that. You know, I've contributed to his campaign and spoken out in support of him.
And
I'm definitely a supporter of Barack Obama. He's a Democrat. I'm so happy we won. I'm sure he's going to be a great president.
He is. I was just a little disappointed. I thought, well, maybe we're not ready for a female president. I don't know. You know, I was kind of confused on that.
Well, she did suffer a lot of sexism in the campaign, unbelievable sexism. But, you know, there is a lot of sexism out there. But I think she's done something so important for women by standing up and keeping her dignity and, you know, persevering right through it, even when a lot of sexists were saying, get out, why are you staying in? And this is before a lot of the states voted. I was just so proud of the way she held herself up and continued and persevered and continued to win states. There was no reason for people to tell her to get out. So, I mean, why deprive the people of their right to vote?
Absolutely. Gloria, how do you pick cases? You must get thousands of requests.
How do I pick them very carefully?
Yeah. Okay.
Is the answer. And it really depends on a number of factors. One of them is it within our area of expertise? Another is, you know, what's the state of the evidence? What are the resources of the client? What are the resources of the firm? What is the likelihood of success? There are a lot of issues, where is it? And a lot of issues that we have to look at. But we do, in our law firm, we do a lot of, I would say, heavy emphasis on plaintiff's employment discrimination, like
mm-hmm.
sexual harassment,
mm-hmm.
Race discrimination, age, sex discrimination, physical handicap, national origin, sexual orientation discrimination, AIDS, as I said, age, wrongful termination of key employees, all kinds of, you know, discrimination. By the way, I had an interesting case that I also taped for Dr. Phil this week. I don't know what the air date is.
Uh-huh.
But it's been in the news where we represent a woman bartender.
Okay.
Who was a bartender at Foxtail Nightclub, a high-end nightclub in West Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And we alleged that she was discriminated against because she gained 5 pounds.
Uh-huh.
When she gained 5 pounds, they relegated her to the kitchen, serving drinks only to the cocktail servers or food servers out of sight of the public.
Uh-huh.
And she was a size 5'6" in her uniform when she was hired, and she's still a size 5'6".
Uh-huh.
So we said that sex discrimination and causing requiring her to fit into the sexual stereotype of what a sexy woman looks like. And it's a very, very interesting issue. When you see her on Dr. Phil, you'd be shocked because she just, you know, why would anybody be relegated to the kitchen because they gained 5 pounds out of the sight of the public? I mean, as you know, women in their premenstrual cycle often gain some water in their bodies and some weight.
Of course.
And I said, you know, who, you know, what we're gonna, are we gonna allow people who may be male chauvinists to decide who's hot and who's not? I don't think so.
No. and that's the whole thing. I mean, it's that whole thing with anorexia. Bulimic women are watching, you know, like Britney Spears, some of these people, and they're saying, well, without the size 3, I can't go anywhere. And I just want to sit down and scream. It's like, what does that have to do with it, you know?
Yeah, I'm
but
happy to say that we were able to get her back on the job.
Yay.
After we filed the lawsuit, their attorney contacted us, and we were able to get her back on the job, serving drinks to the public at the bar without any requirement of any weight requirement whatsoever. So we're very, very happy about that.
Congratulations.
Thank
Let
you.
That weight go away, go away, go away. I mean,
yeah.
It has
I love it when young women are willing to stand up for themselves as she was, and so happy that we've had that victory for her.
And, you know, I was looking at your video of the woman that had the nipples, the breast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, my goodness. They treated her like she was some kind of foreign object. They put her behind a curtain accordingly and gave her these pliers, and I was just, I thought, oh, my God. Because I'm in San Francisco, and everybody here is covered with rings, and I thought, what in the world? How are they going to get through the screening? This is crazy.
Yeah, that was a very interesting case. And in that case, the woman had, she'd gone, you know, when they wanted her, there's a secondary
mm-hmm.
screening,
mm-hmm.
something went off, and she said, oh, that must be my nipple ring.
Oh.
And that's when they said, well, you have to take it out. And she said, it was TSA, she said, no, I can't remove it. You know, it's like been there for 10 years or so.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of growth over it. I can't, she said, I'd have to have a pliers to get that out. And then they hand her a pliers, you know, kind of a rusty pliers.
Oh.
And she was in crying and trying to get it out. Otherwise, she could get on the plane.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, literally, she could have gotten infected from having, you know, these rusty pliers to get that nipple ring out. It was ridiculous. So we sent a letter to the TSA. We had a big news conference. And I have to say, within 24 hours, we were able to get the TSA to change their policy. And apologize to her and then put a new policy up on their government website. Now, that's pretty dramatic. Within 24 hours. And that
policy?
Without filing a lawsuit. Pardon me?
What is their new policy for all my friends here that have rings everywhere?
I haven't looked at their website recently, but the answer is I think you have I think you have an alternative there.
Okay.
And you wouldn't necessarily have to take it out.
Thank God. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I go into stores here, and they've got them on their, like, 10 on their tongues and no telling where.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm so used to it. I never thought about them going through the darn metal detector. Never
yeah,
even
I know.
Thought of that.
I know. I appreciated the fact that TSA was so prompt in being
they
responsive
were,
to the public, which is unusual, I think, for government agencies. So I really commend them on that.
That's what is your very favorite? Do you have a favorite case, or that might be hard to even think you would, or maybe a least favorite, a hard case?
My favorite case is my last case, my present case, and my next case. No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just saying all my cases. I just love them. I love my clients, and you know, I love fighting a good fight for them. And you know, I've had some extraordinary cases that I talk about in my book, Fight Back and Win. You know, the case of Rita Mia is an incredible case. You know, that was I started that in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
A young woman sexually abused by 7 Catholic priests and had a baby by one of them. It's one of the first cases anybody ever heard about in the priest sexual abuse scandal. And everybody said, could it be? Are you kidding me? 7 priests? Well, guess what? I pursued that, and the day that I filed the lawsuit and held the news conference,
uh-huh,
all 7 priests suddenly disappeared from their parishes. Couldn't be found.
Couldn't be found.
Suddenly, yeah. So anyway, but I have to say the LA Times did a huge investigation, found out everything I said was true, and then some. And we fought the church for 23 years. We found the priest. We found one of the priests, and we required him to take a paternity test. Turned out he was the father. We established paternity.
Mm.
And ultimately, the church settled with us, and we got a great result for Rita Mia. So we're very proud of her. And really, I'm sure that the Pope in Rome heard about this case. And I think it helped to empower other people to come forward and with their experiences of also having been sexually abused by priests and having their trust betrayed.
Having their trust. And, you know, I watched one woman on your on one of your videos. She was a model. And she had come, I think, flown to L.A. to some photographer's house. I don't remember the exact.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, that guy was just convicted.
I
think it was last week. That was Anand John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, fashion designer. He was charged with numerous crimes against sexual crimes against women.
Okay.
And he was just convicted, and he's going to be sentenced in January.
So it wasn't just her. So other women, was it after her that they came forth? And
I think she was the first.
Okay.
They did not proceed to trial, the DA, on the charge against that involving her, although the grand jury did indict on her, you know, on her charges and a number of women.
Right.
But the DA just chose a few out of the number of women that had complained about Anand John, proceeded with that case, and he's been convicted on numerous counts. And so, again, we are going to go to sentencing with our client, Natalie Pack, in January, and she's just so happy that it appears that justice is being done.
And I don't think it was easy for her, at least not from what I was watching her. You know, I really admire the women and, you know, anybody that comes out and says, this was done to me, and they're not afraid. You know, I think of the women that are abused, that are afraid to leave with their children, and, you know, because I guess the spouse is going to tell them that he will kill them if they walk out the door. And I often wonder, would it
and
be
look,
better
sometimes,
to...
Sometimes even after they walk out the door, they're killed. So it's kind of they're damned if they stay, and they're damned if they go, damned if they do, damned if they don't. There is a risk, but that's why we need to have, you know, good connection with battered women's shelters and opportunities for women to be safe.
Well, Gloria, if a woman calls 911, like O.J. Nicole Simpson, she made many calls, didn't she, to 911?
Well, he was in fact convicted of misdemeanor spousal battery. And then she called 911, but this is the profile of a batterer is, you know, they batter,
mm-hmm,
and then they say they're sorry, and then they send, you know, flowers or gifts or whatever, and they try to make up for it and promise never to do it again, and then the cycle continues where they batter again. You know, the rage builds up, then they attack, then they ask for forgiveness again, and so it goes.
And
so
it's
hard, but I'm glad we have a lot more consciousness about this issue now because I think it'll help to make more women know that they have options. They just don't have to stay with a batterer. But a lot of women have felt and have been feeling they've been economic captives because they have children. They don't know what else to do, how to support themselves. and the men take advantage of the vulnerability of the woman. So we need to have help women to, you know, really have independent ways to support themselves.
That's the thing. You know, if you have a way to financially, but there comes a point that I would think that no matter what, you got to get away because they're going to kill you no matter what they, you know, you do or don't
do.
Well,
I do believe you're right. I do believe that. And, you know, battering just increases in frequency
and
severity over time.
You know, Gloria, I have Kevin on the line. I don't know if you wanted to call. He wanted to talk to you about the gay, the marriage.
Yes,
thing.
Please. I would love to take calls. Sure.
All right. Sure. All right. Hello, Kevin. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Kevin.
Hello. Yes.
Go ahead.
Miss Allred.
Yes.
Ms.
Hi,
Allred.
Kevin.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. I
hope
you're well.
Good. I'm doing fantastic. I wanted to be able to thank you for what you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, you know, it's me. It's for me, too. It's for all of us because we all have a stake in making sure that everyone is treated equally. And you know, a person doesn't have to be gay or lesbian to care about the rights of gays and lesbians because we all have to stand up for each other and the equal protection of the law for everyone.
Absolutely, and you're carrying the nation's gay and lesbian community with you.
Well, thank you. And I want to say how proud I am of my clients as well for standing
Absolutely.
Up and fighting back and just, you know, it's great teamwork.
Absolutely.
So I have to say that originally I got involved because my clients, Robin and Diane, they wanted to get married to Beverly Hills Courthouse, and they wanted me to come and witness it. This is 4 years ago. Because
mm-hmm.
I knew them as friends. And so I said, well, all right, I'll come. And they knew, I said, but you're going to be denied the marriage license. Well, they knew they were going to be denied it. They still wanted me to come and witness it.
Right.
So then I thought about it after I hung up the phone. I said to myself, I can't just go witness an injustice. That's not me. That's not Gloria Allred just to say, okay, well, I'll witness it. I have to do something about it.
Yeah.
So that's when I decided to research. Okay, well, is there a possibility of challenging this denial of the marriage license? And I did some research the next day and found out there was, and that's when the next morning, right after they denied it, they were denied the license, I immediately announced that we would file a lawsuit and challenge it, and that's how it came to be.
And it's fantastic, and thank you.
Well, thank you, and keep up your courage and keep up the fight.
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Kevin. We're
Bye-bye.
Looking forward to your show. Bye-bye. Okay, and we have, let's see, hello? Shannon? Is this Shannon?
Yes, hello.
Hi, did you have a question for Gloria?
I sure do. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, Shannon.
I want to say thank you so much for fighting hard for the victims and minorities and women's rights in my lifetime.
Well, thank you.
Oh, I love you. I've always loved you. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
My question is derived from the Lacey Peterson murder case,
sure.
where you represented Amber Fry as her
yeah.
attorney. Amber took a decent amount of heat and criticism for having an attorney. Can you tell us when is it appropriate for a victim or a victim of circumstance to get an attorney and why it's important to disregard that criticism and to forge on and protect yourself?
Oh,
and
good.
Tell
Great
us
question.
Reasons.
Great
you know,
question.
Because Amber, she went through so much.
She did. And let me just say something. I'm so glad you brought up Scott Peterson, because I do want to say something about Scott Peterson involving the issue of same-gender marriage. Doesn't it seem ridiculous that Scott Peterson, a convicted murderer,
mm-hmm.
somebody who is convicted of murdering his pregnant wife, an unborn child,
mm-hmm.
and who is on death row, still has the right to marry, even though he's undeserving of that right? And yet same-gender couples, gay and lesbian couples, who've been together sometimes for 50 years
and
who are so deserving of the right to marry, they can't. There's something wrong with that picture.
Wait.
So now back to Amber and Scott Peterson and whether Amber could have an attorney. What I point out in my book, Fight Back and Win, on the chapter on Amber, is one of the things I point out is when there's a victim in a high-profile criminal case, then people should know that that victim has the right to have an attorney, that victim witness. Matter of fact, every victim in a criminal case has the right to have their own attorney. Now, what's the point of getting your own attorney when the district attorney is filing the case? Well, the point of it is that you, when you speak to your private attorney, you have a privilege of confidentiality. In other words, you have a right to have everything you say kept confidential. You can say whatever you want to the attorney, ask any advice, and whatever the attorney says to you as in the way of giving you advice is also confidential. Nobody, when you're on the witness stand, nobody can ask you about it. That means you can feel free to get advice on a daily basis or how often you need to get it from your attorney. People think, well, what they tell the police and the DA is confidential. And it's not.
Oh.
It's absolutely not. There's no privilege of confidentiality there because they're not your attorney. And, you know, and so I had somebody call me the other day and said, I told something to the police and I told something to the DA and I was shocked to see it on the news.
Oh.
Well, I said, well, that's because it isn't confidential when you talk to them. And whatever you say to them is probably going to end up, you know, well, at least as to the police, is going to end up in a report to the defense because they have to disclose what you've said to the defense. And the defense is going to do whatever they're going to do with it. So these are things that a private attorney can tell a victim. So anyway, I think Amber was definitely benefited from being wise enough to get a private attorney. I could also speak out for her during the case when she couldn't because, A, she didn't want to because she didn't want to affect the integrity of her testimony, and, B, at some point there was a gag order against her, not me, though. So, you know, I wanted to be sure to protect her reputation because I do think she is a woman of courage, and I didn't want it to be a case where the operation was successful but the patient died, so to speak, with her reputation in tatters at the end. And I think she came out very well as a result of, you know, making sure that she wanted to do the right thing and that she did do the right thing.
Absolutely. You know, and I want to say one last thing. I watched you on several different occasions just rip Garagus into a new one, and I had great, big, huge, smiling grins on my face. And I just wanted to say thanks for that.
Well, thank you. I think I specialize in that, don't you?
It's really great.
You know, sometimes, and I won't repeat the word, but I think all the listeners can know, people sometimes say to me, God, you really have... And then they refer to a certain part of the male anatomy.
Yeah,
I say, so I say when I see a guy that's really courageous, you know what I say?
Uh-huh.
I say, wow, you really have breasts.
Too much.
So there it is.
There it is. Well,
that's
thank
the
you.
Highest compliment.
It is.
Thank you, Shannon, so much for calling.
Oh, thank you, Shannon.
We have quite a few questions going on in the chat room.
Let's go for it. Let's answer
all
some
right,
of
let's
them.
Let's go for it. All right.
You can go like shotgun real fast one after another,
okay.
And I'll be
how
sure.
All right. How valid is the election process? How valid are the people's votes?
Well, all right. How valid is the election process? For in which election? For I mean, I'm not sure what.
Yeah, because she didn't really go into
okay,
it.
Okay, all right. So go ahead.
Yeah,
it's a good question, but I'm not sure how to answer because I'm not sure what she means. But go ahead.
Yeah, she wants to know why our votes don't count, and I asked her. I said, well, why don't you just call in and talk to her? You know, because it might be easier.
Yeah,
really.
Well, that would be good. Okay, let's go on to some questions that we do understand.
She says, we vote on immigration, then we vote on marriage, and they don't like our vote, so they judge, shop, and
oh, I see.
All
okay, well, I think I answered the question about that. I mean, think of it this way.
Okay.
Look, what if the majority of the voters decided to vote to take away the right of free speech for women?
Absolutely.
Do you think they could overturn our constitutional right to free speech by majority vote?
No.
Right. Well, that's my answer. You can't do that.
Thank
you can't
you.
Take a fundamental right like the right to marry away either by a majority vote. What if they voted, okay, you know what? Only white people can marry. African Americans are not allowed to marry. Latinos are not allowed to marry. Asian Americans are not allowed. What if they did that by a majority vote? You think they could do that? No. Yeah. Why? Because it's a constitutional right.
Absolutely.
Well, that's the same thing for same gender. And you just can't erode... You can't eliminate constitutional rights even by a majority vote of the electorate. Next question.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about, I think some people are a little timid to call in, but I know that I
Oh,
have...
I'm a nice person even if I am a lawyer. Please don't hold that against me.
No, Gloria, you're extremely nice. You could be...
Oh, okay. All
I
right.
think you have it together. And actually, you know, I feel like you're a trailblazing attorney. You're showing... One of the things I read about you, which I kind of personally thought about, is that after women work with you or they're part, you know, they're a client of yours, their voice goes from being very... little girl to more adult, and I, you know, like they take hold of their own power, and you know, I really feel like that's one of the things that women are taught to be sweet, don't speak out, you know, and all of this, and you're here telling us to speak out. Sweetness doesn't count, but what does count is not to let ourselves be sexually abused. On the job, anywhere. Now, if, okay, say I have a job, and I need this job, Gloria, to pay my rent. I have no other way to pay my rent. But somebody is sexually harassing me. What am I going to do? If I quit, if they fire me, if I say, look, quit, what am I going to do? Would you say go ahead and quit?
What, if you're sexually harassed?
Yeah.
I would say the first thing to do is to consult an attorney and see what the best strategy would be.
Consult, okay. Don't just...
You know, because don't act precipitously. I would say go get legal advice from somebody who does this kind of work, a plaintiff's employment attorney,
mm-hmm.
and then get advice as to what you should do. And then they'll help you to guide you through what would be the best approach to this.
All right, so get some legal advice.
Advice
don't...
first.
Yeah.
Or if you can't
yeah.
find an attorney,
yeah.
then go to, you know, first of all, you should complain at your place of business. If there is a complaint procedure.
Right.
You know, human HR, you know, human relations or resources. And
right, right.
At your place of business, you should file a complaint. Or if the perpetrator is, in fact, you know, head of the HR or something, then you don't have to do that, which is futile. But you're supposed to exhaust your remedies within the company first, if you can. But I think you should, you know, you can at any point get the advice of a private attorney as to what to do, and then follow
that
advice.
Don't take it. Don't just say, well, I've got to have this money to pay my rent. You know, if somebody is coming
no.
up every single day and harassing you.
No, you don't have to, you don't even have to take it. After one,
5 minutes.
You know, I think you should make clear that it's not welcome. This is not something that you're welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, you know, get some support, some advice outside. You know, if it doesn't stop, if you can't find an attorney to go to or to get advice, you can also file a complaint with the United States Equal Employment Opportunity Commission or your state fair employment department. But there are, of course, time periods during which rights must be exercised or they're forever lost. So I would suggest that everyone, you know, be aware of what those time periods are, or if you're not aware, again, seek the advice of an attorney. I will say victims are fighting back against sexual harassment. We've literally won hundreds of millions of dollars for victims, and a substantial part of that is for victims of sexual harassment. So
and it just keeps going on. I mean,
yeah, well,
like
it keeps going on, but the good news is the victims are fighting back. And
their
the cost is being shifted from the victim to the wrongdoer. They're going to have to pay for their wrongs against women and the suffering they inflict and the position they're putting them in. And so I'm very proud, again, of the victims who are doing something about it. Now, the reason you don't hear a lot about the results is
right.
because there are a lot of confidential settlements out there.
Oh, okay.
But I can assure you that sexual harassment is rampant. It is definitely widespread. There's not a day that goes by that someone is not contacting me about sexual harassment, and I'm very proud that they're willing to fight back against the harassers.
It's
we're giving
like
them
Hooter.
We're giving those guys an education.
Yeah.
And, you know, once they have to pay out of their wallet, they
okay.
understand what the
they
cost
understand.
Is going to be if they're going to do that.
Yeah, they're
not
going to do
not,
it again.
No, it's substantial.
Mm-mm. Because before, you know, but I read about Hooters where they had the hidden cameras, and I thought, oh, my God. But you won. Y'all won that case.
Oh, yeah, the Hooters case where the women were applying for a job at Hooters, And they were asked to change into a Hooters uniform.
Right.
And they were being secretly videotaped, taking their clothes off, trying the Hooters uniform on, and then putting it back on.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, one of the women spotted the camera, you know, in the back part of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, she went to the police, and the guy was arrested. He's now in prison. And we sued Hooters, and we got a great settlement.
And what about prostitutes? I read that, you know, you feel that it should be legalized. Now, Gloria, if it's legalized, which I wonder, would that make it a more respectable way to earn a living? Would it be, at that point, an okay way? I mean, if it's legal and that's what you know, would that be a respectable way to go ahead and make your living?
Well, you know, if it's legal, you can, of course, then the state can require a health test.
Yeah.
Which I think is good for the public and good for the person who is a prostitute. You know, I just think we would be saving valuable resources. Why are we wasting precious police resources and running after people who essentially are having consensual sex? And, you know, why does a woman have to do this for free?
Absolutely.
Let me think about it.
And why isn't the John tested? You know, if the brothel...
And why isn't he arrested even?
There you go.
You notice Elliot Spitzer did not get prosecuted.
No.
And now the prostitute, she's on television. And probably she probably sold her photos as well to People magazine. She's on this week. And that's fine. I don't begrudge her any of that. But
right.
I'm just saying, ordinarily, prostitutes are prosecuted and the Johns are not.
Are not. So
she's
we've
not quite
sure
what's going to happen to her in the future,
oh,
whether she'll be prosecuted or not.
She's not even sure. Because I know they're in Nevada that the women in those, what are they called, those ranches that are legal.
Brothels.
Yeah, the brothel. They're tested, but not the John, not the people that come in there. You know,
oh,
it's
well, that's
like,
interesting.
Damn.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they even have, according to a friend of mine, they even have a list whether or not you'll do a person that is Afro-American. And I went, what? If you're Afro-American, they have a list, and they ask the prostitutes whether or not you will accept a John if he's Afro-American. And these things are going on all the time. And I think that the main thing is kind of like knowledge. You know, we get the knowledge, we decide where our part is, and
mm-hmm.
I'll try to do something, hopefully, if at all.
Yeah.
We only have about 30, we're running out of time, but I wonder, I want to ask Christina if she's got some questions that she might like to ask you.
Sure.
I just had a couple questions. I read your article that you wrote in the Los Angeles Daily Forum, Los Angeles Daily Journal, where the title was Restoring That Loving Feeling, and you wrote it before the Supreme Court in California
right.
released their decision in May. And I was amazed at the similarities in the language with the Perez versus Sharp case from
exactly.
1948. I was just, you could take that language out and put that in a case for gay marriage. It was just,
and we did.
I was exactly. It was stunningly similar. And I one thing that really caught me from that article is where you said, the Attorney General also argues that marriage is traditionally between a man and a woman. And that is what you hear in a lot of the people that argue against gay marriage is they use the tradition argument. And what do you feel that the movement for not having gay marriage legalized is based on the idea of the tradition of marriage, or
well,
what
yeah,
do you
but the
feel
tradition
is
of marriage,
fear
so,
or
yeah, the tradition of marriage? Excuse me for interrupting. It's so ridiculous to
yeah,
say that. Because,
yeah, exactly.
You know, at one point, 9-year-olds could be married, and we
exactly.
don't do that anymore.
Yep.
At another point, women were property of their husbands during the marriage, when they had no rights to hold property in their own name during a marriage. So marriage is evolving all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it's changed, and so now it's changing again, but it isn't actually, the definition of marriage doesn't need to change.
Yep.
You know, it's still, it can be a union of two people.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it have to be a man and a woman? That's
right.
Why?
It doesn't
affect the rights
so,
of men of heterosexuals to give also
exactly.
rights to same gender couples.
And I think that's what it's, it always has to be reminded when the argument
right.
against gay marriage is given, that nobody's rights are being taken away. You're just giving rights that should be there in the first place. And I think
exactly.
that it's just that nothing will happen. You know, you write about Massachusetts, and Connecticut, where I live, has legalized gay marriage. And there's well, Connecticut's still afloat. You know, we haven't separated from the United States and gone into the ocean. Or
good
you know,
point,
we're
right.
We're still here kicking, going along. Everything seems fine. And I think it's just this fear of change is just there's a lot of people I know that embrace it, and the awakening that has come as a result of Proposition 8 passing has been incredible to see the people, the protests, and really
yeah right everybody said, I mean, like a lot of people say, like on the internet, I mean, has your life changed because Ellen DeGeneres was able to marry Portia? I mean,
I
so what? It hasn't affected my life.
It hadn't affected mine.
So what?
It's like somebody's waiting for something, you know, earth-shattering to happen, and all that happens is that love is recognized. That's all that's happening. Is
that's
that
right.
There's more joy, at least on this planet, and how can that be bad? I just don't get it, you know.
Beautifully
yeah.
said.
How can it be bad?
Well, you know, injustice in any form, Gloria Allred is here to let us know that we shouldn't tolerate it, not for a moment.
Exactly.
And that, you know, Gloria, you empower me in the fact that your fearlessness goes through me, like just in every fiber of my being, that it would be better to die than it would be to live afraid. And I think that
better a short life with courage than a long life in fear. And I'm glad you mentioned empowerment, because I do, at the end of each chapter of my book, I give little
yes.
empowerment lessons, a plain common sense, here's what you can do in your own life to become more empowered. Here's what you can learn from each case. You know, not the legal stuff, but the
right.
the common sense stuff. What can you learn that can help you in your own life? And because I want people to know they have more power to win justice in their own life than they've ever realized they had. And there are things they can do, and these are the kinds of tools that I want to give them.
And
that's
what
right.
I love about is that you said everybody has that strength that I have within. And that's what I loved in your book
yeah,
where you
yeah.
say that everybody can tap into that. And you started the book with, you must be the change you wish to see in the world. And that's
exactly. And I
world.
Might add, and I end it with quotes from Barack Obama and Hillary Rodham
yeah.
Clinton.
Yeah.
And that was before they declared for president. I had no idea that they were going to be declaring. But you know, these are the agents of change, and I think people do want to change their lives and change their country, you know, to the extent that they can. And there are ways to do that, and I am glad that people have become the change they want to see in the world. We need more of that.
And Gloria Allred, I must tell you that we are more than honored that you spent an hour of your life with us tonight. And I am sure that everyone will get your book, Fight Back and Win, My 30-Year Fight Against Injustice, and how you can win your own battles. And I just want to tell you that out of all the people that I've heard in many, many years, you speak from your gut. I feel like you go beyond just what you learned in school or knew. But just listening to you empowers me to go out and not be afraid, and I just cannot thank you enough.
Well, thank you so much. And just remember, the costs of fear are sometimes greater than the costs of being empowered.
Yeah.
And when you stand up and you fight back and you win, it feels really good. And often the benefits definitely have outweighed the risks. So everybody, thank you so much. For listening and engaging in this conversation, and I appreciate it. Continued success with your show.
Thank you so much.
All right.
And have a
bye-bye.
Great evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gloria. Thank you.